This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 517, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
It's yours.
Whose world is this?
The world is yours. The world is yours.
It's mine. Whose world is this?
It's mine.
Whose world is this?
The world is yours. The world is yours.
It's mine.
I sip the dumb peak, watching Gandhi till I'm charged and writing in my book of rhymes. All the words past the margin. The whole of the mic, I'm throbbing. Mechanical movement.
Hello, and welcome to the first iFanboy Pick Week podcast of 2016. This is episode 517. I did not plan that. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
That was a virtual minefield. Good work.
Was. And Connor Kilpatrick.
We're back.
We're back, baby. It's a new year. It's a new, fresh start. And we here at iFanboy are here because we like comics. And every week we read a big old stack of them. And then one of us deems the book that we enjoyed the most. And we call that the pick of the week. And then we join back together here, like the strong team that we are, to talk about that book, other books, any other fun stuff, maybe some sad stuff, maybe some weird stuff. You never know what's going to happen. Also, we like
sad
to hear from
stuff.
You.
Later on.
That's what we call a tease in the business. But yes, no matter what, it will be fun. But I want to warn you that we're going to talk about what happens in the comics that came out this week. So spoilers beware. If you haven't read your comics yet, you might want to put them down and come back and listen after you've read them, or just be warned. So exercise some caution. So to kick off 2016, Mr. Josh Flanagan, what was the first pick of the year?
The first pick of the year of 2016 on this episode 517 was Unfollow number 3. And I didn't take any math in college, so I want to go ahead and point that out. This is a Vertigo series from writer Rob Williams, who wrote Royals Masters of War last year, or I guess last year, which we loved very much, and artist Mike Dowling, and various other people, including lettering superstar Clem Robbins. when this first showed up, I looked at it and I thought, oh, what a horrible attempt at a topical kind of thing. It was like a hashtag of a comic book, because it was called Unfollow, and it was about this mysterious 140, which is, of course, a reference to Twitter.com.
It's now outdated reference.
let's just watch what happens on that one. Do you remember when Netflix changed their DVD service's name for like a week?
Yeah, I remember that.
And then they were like, we're taking it back! I just realized that if you go to the DVD part of Netflix now, it's just called DVD.com.
Really?
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah, they own that.
They make it difficult for you to get to the DVDs now.
Yeah. They don't want you to. And
maybe put some fucking movies in the streaming service.
Maybe, yeah.
Let's not talk about this right now.
Can we?
Offline. Let's offline this
one. I kind of want to, and I bet you that there's... I'm going to go 30% of the people at home kind of want us to also. You see, that's fair?
That is fair.
Okay, yeah. So the first issue, I was like, all right, I'm going to read
but
it.
But hold on. When did you dismiss it? After the first issue, or just from the cover, or
I initially in my mind dismissed it, but I saw that it was Rob Williams, and I thought, oh, I really like that last thing he did, and I want Vertigo to succeed. They are making an effort this year, again, like in the last few months, I think.
I think they're turning around. I think there's a lot. I'm reading three Vertigo books right now.
Yeah, and I want that to be the thing. And there's like even the books that I'm not reading, I'm like, okay, there's something interesting about that. Doesn't mean that they're all for me, but they're putting stuff out there in a way that 9 months ago they weren't. And so I'm happy about that, and I want to support it. So I picked it up. I read it. We talked about that. I enjoyed it. It was pretty good. Second one, I laid it out a little better, and we got what was going on. And this third one came along, and I was almost looking forward to it at this point. Even though I'm like, oh, it's
almost,
well, as much as I can, anything.
I was really looking forward to this issue. I think that this is slowly. I mean, we're going to talk about this specific issue in a second, but it's been building. I think that the art's fantastic and the story's good. I was really happy when it came out.
Yeah, and I tried after cringing at the title and the log line of the concept. I tried the first and second issue and was intrigued, but didn't know where it was going. And with this issue, and Josh will tell us about it, but it was like, ah, okay, I see. So
yeah, and that's kind of the point. That was what impressed me, is that so basically the story goes that this super rich dude is dying. And he has made a list, supposedly randomly generated list of 140 people in the world who will split up his fortune. He's worth $18.42 billion, which means that everybody is going to get $130-something million dollars of the 140. Like, they get it automatically. And he literally flies them all to his private island.
And he wears
a Bond villain uniform.
And the idea was that he wanted to take his fortune and bring together humanity.
Yes.
And so, like, it's a random sampling, you know, like, it's, yeah, so.
So, and it's all well and good, and it's kind of interesting, and these sort of different, the driving thing here for me so far has been that the members of the 140 that we've met are very diverse in who they are and their personalities, and they're just sort of a bunch of really strange characters.
And that was, I think, the first couple was more about setting the stage and sort of, you know, in the old cliche, gathering the team. You know, we've just been meeting a handful of these 140 people.
But also just figuring out what is this? What does this mean? What are we doing here? And so it was like, I wasn't sure, and which is sort of what Ron said. I wasn't sure what we were doing here, but it was interesting enough to keep going with it. And in this one, it's basically revealed one of the people was killed, and I think that happened in the first issue. I didn't go back and check on it, but I think there was a murder at the very beginning of the first issue.
I think it had to happen here because the number automatically changes when someone dies.
Oh, right. No, you're right. So somebody did get killed in the beginning. Maybe we don't understand that yet. Doesn't matter. so basically we're set up with this sort of dastardly plan where there's 139 of you left. Oh, by the way, if one of you were to kill all the other 138, you'd get all the money.
Well, the more people die, the bigger your share gets. Yeah. And then,
And what I liked about it is that this is pretty routine, sort of, you know, Saturday
manhunt kind of thing.
Yeah, and I
most dangerous game.
I liked that was where it went because I wasn't expecting it, for one thing, and two, I was like, oh, it's just, that's satisfying, that's fun, and also that we didn't get to learn that until the end of the third issue.
Yeah.
And they basically, I'm like, I feel like I'm respected as a reader. Like, you're letting the story go at its own pace, and I was interested enough to stick with it this long. I liked it. There was a sex scene on the plane. There's a man with a panther head of some kind. There's a lot going on here. Like, the girl on the plane, I'm super interested in her. I don't get it at all.
She's already wealthy.
Yeah.
She's already a wealthy, disaffected heiress. I was in for this series, into this issue, and then at the end of it, I was like, oh, okay.
Right.
Here we go. This is going to be fun. And I think we should talk about Mike Dowling.
We absolutely should.
Is really good. He's the artist in this issue, in this comic. He does the art and I guess the inks as well. He has sort of a quietly Steve Laiholo, however you say that last name.
That guy.
I don't work here anymore.
sort of very tactile and very delicate in his pencil work.
I'll tell you what it feels like. It feels like Vertigo artwork.
Yes.
Yeah. That's
very
true.
Much so. And I think if you were to look back at like issues of Lucifer or something like that, which was, God, that was Ryan Kelly and the other guy, Peter something, I forget. But it feels
Dinklage.
Like that, huh?
Peter Dinklage?
It was not, I don't think, I don't want to go on, I don't want to go out and completely say it was Peter Dinklage, but I'm almost certain it wasn't. It was the guy who drew The Unwritten, which I can't think of at the moment. But it sort of fits in with that, even with The Unwritten,
Peter Krause.
Nope, not him.
No.
Also, that's wrong. Peter Krause is the actor from 6 Feet Under, but Peter Krause is the artist from Irredeemable.
Right. Oh, that's the one. Yeah,
they're spelled the same, but not pronounced the same.
Peter DeCruz?
You know what? I'm going to talk about the book instead of looking it up because it doesn't really matter.
I went to elementary school with Peter DeCruz, so it probably wasn't him.
What if it was, though? That'd be interesting.
I'm
going to say Peter Gross.
Peter Gross.
Because that is correct, because I just looked it up.
Yes, it is Peter Gross. You know who popped into my head when you said Peter Gross?
Michael Gross.
Exactly. Family Ties Michael Gross, who I, by the way, consider to be the TV dad. Especially
he just did a Hallmark Christmas movie with Meredith Baxter Burney as Mr. Mrs. Claus.
When he pops in your head, with beard or without?
With.
Okay. Always and also, what with the recent Cosby issues, I think he really has solidified his spot there.
Right, yeah. So. Well, he's a hippie. So.
Yeah, but he worked for a public TV station. He's the dad I always wanted, is what he is. Now, this is... So one of the conversations that we had going in is how are we going to make this show better this year and make it more... And it was to sort of stay on track a little bit. And let's see, how far are we in here? About 10 minutes in, and we have failed in a big way. And I think that this is, it's not respectful to Mr.'s Williams or Downing, and I'm sorry
about
that.
Peter Gross's fault.
It's Peter Gross's fault. No, but I think collectively, I don't know if I would have made this my pick of the week, but I definitely see where it's coming from, you being, you know, someone who's into Vertigo and this sort of thing. And I enjoyed this a lot. I mean, I'm really intrigued as to where this goes. Because now this is the crazy billionaire brings a bunch of people to an island and sets them up to kill each other. That's a fun premise. I mean,
he very much has like a philanthropist kind of vibe to him, except that he's dressed like Blofeld.
Is that a weird shirt? Should I not have bought that one over Christmas?
It looks
like a Luke Skywalker Return of the Jedi shirt, actually.
Yeah. It doesn't have any buttons. That's a bad sign right away. And, he's hiding the fact that if you look at him, this is actually a really nice art thing, and they didn't call it out, but they did it, is that he's talking to all of the 140 from, like, sort of a ledge above them, and you can't see... It just looks like a lectern in front of him, sort of. And then as you come to the other side of it, you can see there's a walker right in front of him. There's a bunch of oxygen tanks and an IV.
It's like FDR giving a speech.
Yes, exactly. So, and that's really subtle. And I like that about it. I like that the sort of story and adventure of this seems like it's straight out of like a 1960s movie.
Mm-hmm.
But the way it's done is a very subtle and modern comic book approach to it, which I think is what I'm coming to expect from Rob Williams, basically. You know? It's not breaking the mold of anything, but it's done really well and it's interesting.
Yeah, because I mean to a certain degree, I mean this has got echoes of what was it, Avengers Arena, whatever the Dennis Hulbert, echoes of that, but then also a little bit of it's a mad world or like those wacky kind of so I think it's cool. I agree with you. I think the art is really intriguing, and the presentation of the different characters, like we're not going to meet all 139 of these people, but if we do, that'd be interesting.
There's
but
Peter
I doubt
Gross,
it.
There's Michael Gross, they're in there.
But I think it sets up an interesting interesting world to go visit and see what happens and where this goes, you know, because I have no idea where it's going.
I think this is probably my pick as well.
Yeah, I came to the end and I closed it and I was like, what? You know what, that feels like a pick of the week, but I wasn't really expecting it either, so I hadn't really considered it until I just sort of finished it, and then I was like, all right, I'm gonna keep that in my back pocket, and I read the rest of my books, and it was a pretty clear choice for me. I think,
great art, intriguing characters, fun premise.
New doesn't feel like the other comics I'm reading. That's big for me right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Because
we've read a lot of comics. Is the point. So I had a problem with Star Wars and Darth Vader, but I am going to take full responsibility of this myself.
Uh-oh.
I read them out of order.
Oh well, it's right there on the cover.
I know,
Josh.
But like the thing is this: I look forward to reading Darth Vader, Vader Down. So I just saw it and I started reading it.
Vader
and
Down.
I was like, that didn't make any... Vader Down! Didn't make any sense. And then I went to read Star Wars. So, here's what I did. I read Darth Vader again after I read Star Wars.
Wow.
I did that for the show.
You double dipped.
I'm not complaining about it. I'm telling you...
How'd that work out?
Worked much better that way.
Okay, good.
It should be noted here that we have moved up Star Wars Corner to the top of the show.
Well, yes. I can't think of Akbar's race right now, and it's really bothering me.
Mon Calamari.
Okay, it's a Mon Calamari head on a robot body with four lightsabers.
Yeah.
Named Carbon.
Very echoes of Grievous.
Quite, I guess. I don't really remember most of that, to be honest with you. I don't know that I love the ending of this but I'm intrigued by it still. I will. This whole little event, this Vader down thing, sucked me back in totally.
Yeah, I mean, it was when it comes down to it. I mean, this whole however many issues this event was take place over the span of like it feels like 2 hours. You know, like,
yeah.
It's like Vader crashed, they're like, Vader down, they're all going for it, and then just a ton of crazy shit happens, and it's just like one thing after another, like, the pace was so fast, and it ended kind of abruptly, and it ended with everyone kind of shrugging and just kind of going their separate ways, but that's how it goes, you know, well, like, that's, you know, like...
Well, yeah, they got other movies they got to get to.
Right, yeah, exactly.
they can't kill anyone or anything like that, except Carbon, whoever the hell that is. But it did, you know what it felt like? It felt like one of those little mini crossovers that are kind of fun, that are not overbearing. They're not with you for 6-7 months, but like 2 or 3 books get together and they do a storyline and every week you get a piece or two of it. And then, you know, it feels kind of big and fun and moves fast and then it's over. And I was like, oh, that was good. That was what this was. And I have noticed that a lot of the things that were bothering me about the Star Wars series at the start of it, like, wait, can you do this? Like, they're not bothering me anymore.
Yeah.
Because they're doing a good job.
Yeah, I think this all worked. This is a great little moment. This feels like it could have just been a movie, you know, like it feels like, you know, they put the pieces on the board, told a story, gave us some great action, gave us some great moments. And it ends with the gang back on the Falcon. C-3PO doesn't have arms. And
there is the question of what did Darth Vader do there and why?
Yeah, exactly. Which is going to lead to the next, you know, phase. Yeah. I think it was a success. Good job, you know, Kieran Gillen, Jason Aaron, Mike Diodato, and Salvador LaRocca.
I will say, you can bring back Eminem at any goddamn time you want.
I know.
Because I didn't love the art.
Yeah, well, the art was really the only, on both sides. Diodato had, there were moments where I was like, oh, Diodato.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, wow. And then I would get to another page. I'm like, oh, okay, there's the Diodato I remember. You know, like it was a little inconsistent. But LaRocca, like I said in a previous issue of Vader, I feel like is starting to feel the burn of doing a year, you know. Yeah. So,
well, you know, he can do robots and Vaders really well. And we get to – there's some rough Wookiees.
Well, yeah, some rough Wookiees.
There's Wookiee inconsistency.
And the real challenge is that it seems as if Marvel or Lucas or Lucasfilm or whomever.
It's not Lucas.
Not Lucas. Definitely not Lucas. they really just want Marco Cecchetto to be doing everything. I get that feeling because of the photo referency. And he did Obi-Wan and Anakin number one, which came out this week, which
I couldn't do it.
Yeah, I couldn't do it either.
I like Charles Soule's work a lot. I couldn't do it. That's a bridge too far, and I'm sorry. And also, I didn't want to have to judge it. I just backed away.
Exactly.
Low.
But Vader down is a success.
Vader down.
Vader down.
That's the last time we get to say that.
You really grabbed onto my Vader down meme.
Vader down.
You've got
Jessica. To say. He's not dead inside.
No, I know. All right. So. Continuing the all-new, all-different Marvel relaunches that seems to be never-ending, we finally get a new edition of Uncanny X-Men. Uncanny X-Men number 1 came out, and being the X-Men fan and being the loyalist to Uncanny X-Men, I was like, all right, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to do this. You know, from what I read, the team seemed really interesting. It's Magneto, Sabretooth, Psylocke, Monet, and Angel, who's back in his Archangel kind of... apocalypse, which I like that look.
Similar lineup to what's coming out in the movie
it's very, actually it's a good point, I didn't realize that. It's very similar to the Horsemen of the Apocalypse in the upcoming movie, but Cullen Bunn, solid writer, great, and it's Greg Land.
That's why I did not read this. I had my finger over the download button, and I was about to press it, and I went, oh, never mind.
And I try to give it the benefit of the doubt, and in Greg Land's defense, I don't know what he's doing doing differently, but it didn't feel as obnoxious as previous times Land has been on the X-Men in terms of the photo tracing and all that sort of stuff. It felt there were a couple panels I'm like, oh, okay, that's actually more cartooning, like that's actually drawing, okay, cool. But then you get to a page where there's a action pose and it's totally like it's the same old Land crap that we deal with, you know, that we expect. That said, we still don't know what's going on in the world of the mutants and why Storm and her faction are over in limbo and what, you know, like you get the sense that everything's all in kind of chaos and everyone's trying to fend for themselves. And I don't really know why this team of Magneto and Psylocke and Sabretooth are all together doing what they're doing. But, you know, I'm contractually bound to read Uncanny X-Men, so I will find out. So.
Shouldn't you have stopped reading all comics?
Yeah, that's what it is, because you were contractually bound to stop when they renumbered.
That was the deal you made. You said it in front of Jason Aaron at San Diego Comic Con that you would drop all comics if they ever renumbered.
I didn't say all comics.
Yes, you did.
I didn't say all comics.
If they ever renumbered Uncanny X-Men, you were out.
I was out for X-Men, not for all comics.
So, okay. So you're reading X-Men.
Listen, all right. It's old habits.
Sometimes
die
you say things at the con, it doesn't mean anything.
Exactly. Stuff that's said at the con stays at the con.
Forget
that's
it, Jake. It's just the con.
Yeah, so, Ron, I've never done hallucinogenic drugs before, but I feel like reading Paper Girls is kind of similar because lots of things are going on. I'm very confused. People are talking, but I don't understand what they're saying. Everyone looks weird.
It's interesting because I want to talk.
Scared, Ron.
I want you. It's okay, Connor. All right. Well, first, we're going to talk you down from this. First, do you remember what you took?
was it the brown stuff? Because
I would like to point that I put my finger in my ear, similar to Dan Aykroyd as Jimmy Carter.
That was a great reference.
But for all those of you who remember the Siren Alive from 1977, but anyway,
I'm pretty sure you don't remember it from 77.
No, I think I remember it from 89. Anyway, I wanted to talk about Paper Girls 4 because I feel like after the first issue came out, we haven't really talked about it, revisited it, and the thing is, it vexes me a bit because I feel like it's 85% there.
Yeah, right? I feel like there's a Brian K. Vaughan conundrum happening right now.
I agree.
We were all very excited for his return to comics after working in television. And he has four books, Saga, The Private Eye, The We Stand on Guard, Paper Girls. Was there another one?
No, that's it. Well, the new one, the Barrier one. So.
Right, it hasn't come out yet. Right? Oh, right.
Yeah.
We only had one issue of it. I feel like Saga and The Private Eye feel like a Vaughn comic, and We Stand on Guard did not feel at all like a Vaughn comic, and this one is just really weird. It felt like it at first, the first issue did, and then it took a really hard right turn, and I don't know what I'm reading.
Yeah. And the thing is that Cliff Chang is one of my favorites, and I think you guys enjoy him as well,
absolutely.
Too.
And he's
killing it on this. I mean, visually, it looks great. And Matt Wilson on the colors is, you know, they're such a great team. And this particular issue had what I loved was just a great in the middle of the issue. One of the girls of the Paper Girls gets grabbed by this alien monster and has a flashback of her life. And it's just three pages of her playing Arkanoid. Or four pages of her playing Arkanoid, which was like what the hell is going on?
Nine panel grids. It was a lot of Arkanoid playing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but it was great. I loved it. I thought it was great.
Is that like the guy? I feel like that's the kind of thing where Cliff was either like, all right, cool, or all right.
Well, what was great is in these, I mean, honestly, these four pages could stand on their own because you see the passage of the idea was that this alien thing grabs her by the neck and she sees her life flashing before her eyes. But all she sees is herself playing Arkanoid on a Nintendo Entertainment System over the span of like 2 years. And you see a Christmas tree, you see New Year's stuff, you see it's raining, you see it's snowing.
She's bigger.
Yeah, she's on the phone. Like her dad's reading the paper while she's playing. Like the sprinklers are going off. You see her get excited when she gets to a later round. Then you see it later on where she's just tired and she's, you know, frustrated at it. And then like, and after that happens, all the character can say is, God, why didn't I just stop playing that game? And which I felt as if was a very Private Eye-esque thought. You know, like it was like, wow, BKV really is passing a lot of judgment on a lot of the things that have become culture, you know, which I think is
that's been his thing.
Yeah, no, exactly. But yeah, I don't know what the hell's going on here either. And I keep waiting for the decoder ring or the moment where we find out. And
well, this is issue four. And just unlike Unfollow with issue three this week, we got a strong sense of the story. I don't have a strong sense of the story so far. Yeah. And people have made that claim against Saga, but I think they're very different books. Saga, you understand from the beginning, it was a saga. It was a space opera.
But you understood what the premise was, too.
And you're following these characters through generations.
Yeah.
I don't know the stakes of this story.
Yep.
Just crazy things keep happening every three pages, and I don't know why.
Arkanoid was hard.
I remember
Arkanoid was hard.
It was a lot of fun, though.
It was like they'd be like, oh, like Oh, they have Arkanoid. All right, well, we'll play that. I kind of wanted to play Missile Command instead, but...
Well, I was impressed because not only was she playing Arkanoid on Nintendo, but she had... It looks as if she had the controller with the dial.
The dial, yeah, totally.
The right, left, the turning dial as opposed to...
The paddle.
The paddle, yeah, yeah.
Oh, and that was on Nintendo?
Yeah, it was on Nintendo.
Because
yep.
I had Atari with the paddles.
I actually thought this was a mistake in the art. It should have been an Atari. It should have been.
No. I played Arkanoid on Nintendo. I totally
with the paddle. Yeah, but
the controller. Yeah, paddle. You had a paddle controller?
They sold Arkanoid with a paddle controller. They did.
Remember the Max controller? That had a different kind of thumb.
No, the Max controller was more. Oh, now we're really old. But the Max controller was more like the future, you know, PlayStation or Xbox controller. It had those little, you know, like.
Yeah, but it also, like, the control pad had, like, a sliding thing so that your finger didn't actually move off of it.
No, I have it right. I just Googled it right now. I totally am correct. Okay. They sold Taito.
You don't need to get snotty about it.
No, I'm happy.
I'm totally correct, is what you said. I mean, guys,
I'm happy I remembered it. That's all I'm saying. I thought it was crazy, but no, it's Taito, T-A-I-T-O, the company that made it. They sold it on NES, and they sold a paddle controller that just had one, had a dial and had a button.
Were there other games you could play besides Arkanoid, or was that it?
No, it actually says Arkanoid on the paddle.
Oh, wow,
So that's commitment.
You had to really like Arkanoid.
Well, it's like getting the gun for Duck Hunt.
Yeah.
Other games, they just didn't.
I mean, if you think about Arkanoid was basically just Breakout, but they added all the power-ups and boosts and all that sort of stuff, and they really took it further than Breakout ever went. You know, I thought Arkanoid was way more exciting as a game. You know?
I think that we should probably talk about the next book.
Just saying.
Because you were about to go deep.
Yeah, really going to go deep on Arkanoid.
Table that.
Maybe we'll do another podcast about Arkanoid.
Put a pin in it.
Paper Girls, I don't know what's going on, but the Cliff Chang art keeps me coming back. Like, every time I read an issue, I'm satisfied because of that.
I want to like it more than I do.
So do I. And what I'm expecting is either next issue, either issue 5 or issue 6 to be...
Well, it's got to, right? Because that's the first trade arc. It's got to. You got to know what's going on by the end of the first arc.
Exactly. That's what I'm waiting for. So we'll see.
Speaking of endings, the Fade Out number 12 ended probably my favorite Image book of the last 12 months. This was the classic L.A. noir crime story ending in which our hero finds out who was the killer, finds out why the starlet was killed, why she died, who did
maybe
it.
Maybe that happened. Maybe it happens this way. I'm not saying. I don't know.
But what's great about it is there's no justice, there's no vengeance, there's no happy ending. It's a very L.A. There's L.A. noir is a subgenre of crime, and it's a very very much in that vein. And where finds our hero stumbling down, is it Sunset Boulevard that he's on with a bottle of booze?
I think you keep saying our hero, and you know Charlie is not quite heroic.
But, he's our protagonist.
No, I know that. I just mean I like that subversion, basically. And I liked that about this is that as you got towards the end of this, there were several ways in which he could have been happy had he been able to swallow it. And I mean girls.
Like, he can't do it. He's got so many demons, not just from the war, but also from all the things that have happened since the war, that he just can't be happy. And I also liked in the intervening months, this has been coming out, going to see Trumbo. I'm reading the Trumbo biography right now. And so tying this all into the Red Scare in Hollywood is very interesting. And this was a really fantastic.
Well, I feel like that's Hollywood Boulevard.
There's no stars in the street, though.
There isn't after, just past, just as you go west of Highland, they stop.
No, I mean in these drawings, there are no stars in the street.
Oh, there were less then.
Yeah, sure. But I think speaking of the drawing, I think one of the biggest this is the best thing Brubaker and Sean Phillips have done. And after reading the issue, then I went back and I reread it, but not reading it, just looking at the art.
Yeah.
And there are some panels in here that are just amazing.
I'm gonna miss you, Dottie.
Oh man, yeah.
The lips on the on the mirror.
Yeah,
that was pretty fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Betty Breitweiser.
Look at the finale where he's walking, stumbling down the street, and suddenly the panels get all canted and images get stretched, and you really feel his despair.
Sean, I mean, I used to say it all the time that Sean Phillips is one of the best storytellers in comics, and he does it in a completely unflashy way.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Also, yeah, he draws big butts.
And he cannot lie. And this is, I mean, it's amazing. This is amazing. I mean, like, when imagine when this is all into one nice hardcover.
Yeah.
It's gonna. Yeah. This is one of the best things they've ever
done.
This
is gonna be a popular gift I give out next year.
It was. I like that it ended. Like, I don't feel like I've been. I don't feel like
it's
I've been
novel.
Reading this
it's
forever. I know. Yeah. But like, there's so many things where I'm like, boy, I feel like I've been reading this for 2 years and I don't know why I am anymore.
Well, that's like
I started out liking.
I mean that's the thing, like with like Fatale probably went along longer, you know, like what was like 5 or 6 trades or whatnot, you know, like this just being 2 trades, 1 hardcover, 12 issues, like this is just great. It just focuses on the storytelling and do them doing what they do well, and it's contained and it's done, and they announced at the back of this issue that they're going to be doing a criminal novella to celebrate the 10th anniversary of Criminal, which is awesome. But like, you know, this is right now I feel like they're at a high point and do more of these kinds.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah,
the final line, and he wants a screen, but he doesn't, is fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. So,
this is these guys at both in their sweet spots.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
So, I wanted to. I guess probably don't need a lot of time, but I wanted to touch on Doctor Strange, #4. I know that everybody likes Doctor Strange a lot, and I don't tend to think of him as a character that I like a lot. So I guess it took this team and this sort of take, and I don't even know if this is an unusual take on Doctor Strange as a character, but I'm really enjoying this, is my point.
Cool.
I really like the world and also the subworld that's going on. I liked, boy, the bits about the Ancient One, you know, talking about punches, you know, and how the magic takes a toll on you. That's really interesting. It's sort of a very different spin than the sort of endless ammunition that these characters always seem to have. Like, they can always just do spells.
Yeah. And I like there's a moment in it where, you know, where the girl says, you know, that's impossible, and Strange says, no, that's not in my, you know, I don't know that word.
Yeah.
You know, and like that idea of this, like, almost like, you know, challenges of the unknown, like, you know, like this world where anything can happen, and you know, and now when Strange is put up against something that seems impossible, like, that's a great conflict, you know.
Right. Now there's a toll on. There's a price to pay for this.
Exactly.
And it was when he showed up in the Invincible Iron Man, which we're not talking about this week, like, that was also clearly, that was referenced. Like, there was a there was a through line to that. I don't know. He seems pretty beat, and that's it's rough for him. He's got to eat gross food. And there's a lot of interesting ideas here that I think expand on the myth of this character. And even if it only exists in this story, that's fine. Also, fine, you know, like, you know, Bacello, you know, like, boy, he's the right guy for this.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, 100%. And it's one of those things, like, artists would like, oh, I'd love to draw. If I was a guy who wanted to make my living doing comic books for Marvel, I'd be really happy if I was doing this book.
Yeah, totally. It's good stuff.
Yeah. Just check in on that.
Yeah, we'll check in on how you can help iFanboy in this new year. Go to iFanboy.com/support. That's where you can find your Amazon link. And everyone who did that over the holidays to do your shopping, we thank you very much. I'll pat myself on the back.
Yes.
And you can continue to support us that way. Make all your Amazon purchases through iFanboy.com/support. We get a little piece of that sale. You don't lose any money, just Amazon does, and everyone's happy, and the show keeps going, and we get to buy new microphones and things, and it's wonderful. Another way you can help us out is by becoming an iFanboy member for $3 a month or $30 a year. You can help us out directly, and you become our favorite people in the world. You can also just go there and give us any random donation you want. And no crazy billionaires like an Unfollow came through in 2015. We're hoping 2016 will get one.
That said, though, I mean, as much as we'd love a crazy centric billionaire, I was reviewing the end of December, beginning of January, and actually a large number of you gave us donations at the end of the year, and we want to thank everybody who did that. For every dollar counts, and there were some very, very generous people, not in the billions, but let's just say.
Well, I'm just saying, if a guy shows up and says, "Here's $18 billion, but you know, this for the last iFanboy standing," that's fine.
Well, what you're doing, you're paying attention. Like, basically, it's long tail theory versus the 1%.
Yeah.
You want to put a bunch of them together? Do you want to pay attention to all those people? You're just trying to bag the whale.
Well, I'm just saying, if he wants to put us in a room and say, here's $18 billion, you know, for the guy who
I'm not going
to
say no, Connor.
No.
To $18 billion. Although, I would totally be happy with a third of that, and I wouldn't want to kill either of you.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I would not.
I don't want to, but if that's part of the rule, if that's part of the thing.
Oh, because nobody gets it unless that happens?
Exactly.
Well, no, I mean, because I also, going back to Unfollow, he never says you have to kill each other.
That was the good part. Actually, that's honestly the good part about it. That's not the rule.
It's, right. Hey,
listen, you can if you want. I'm going to leave this here.
It's like the Joker in the Dark Knight. This is the test of your humanity.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is, if you want to set that scenario up, take a flash out to the Bahamas, we'll go for that.
Sure, yeah. That's fine.
Yeah, I think we all agree on that.
So everyone who goes to fmweb.com/support and helps us out in last year and the coming years, we thank you very much.
I don't know that we're making the case for the other people.
We'll even live stream it.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. There's your carrot. There's your carrot.
Oh, man. So, all right. Well, moving on into the world, back into the world of comics. So Nova number 3 came out this week. And if you remember, I really, really liked Jerry Duggan's run on Nova. And I was kind of upset to see other people taking it. But that said, Sean Ryan is writing it. Corey Smith's doing the art. I just really like it.
It's
a lot of fun. This has a lot of – there was a moment of Nova and Miles Morales and Ms. Marvel having lunch on a ledge and then dealing with Moloids. And, like, for a moment, it felt like young, youthful, energetic Marvel, and I liked it.
The only thing I'd say against it is that Nova's – I think he's younger than the other two characters, and they were drawn to all be sort of the same age.
Yeah.
Like suddenly Ms. Marvel went from being like 16, 17 to being like 12.
Yeah.
And then I thought her voice was a little off. But other than that, I thought it was a super fun issue.
Yeah. No, I just love it. I like this character, Sam, as Nova, and dealing with the stuff that he's dealing with and learning the powers and doing all that stuff. I just think it's a good time. It's a good comic book time. So.
So many years ago, I think it's many years ago at this point, there was a good comic book time provided by Image Comics, Joe Kelly, and Four Eyes, and Max Fiumora.
Fiumora, yep.
Fiumora. Yep. I might be saying that wrong. And it was a little miniseries about a kid and dragons, and I liked it very much. And also we were like, who's this Fiumora guy? He's quite good. And so what we now have here is a new miniseries, because I don't think Fiumora is doing this monthly, where we're back to this, Four Eyes Hearts of Fire number 1 by that same team, Joe Kelly and Max Fiumora, and we've moved along a little bit. The kid is in a different, they're in Chicago during the Great Depression, and basically he's now trying to learn how to be a dragon trainer.
Is he older than he was before?
No, he's still that same little kid with the scrawny neck and the big round head. He's a little older, but I don't think it's much later. And it was good. It was everything that I liked about the other one. It was just expanding on that world a little more. And one of the things that I'd say I didn't love about the other series is that you just didn't get a ton of it. I mean, I think we got 4 issues over the course of almost 2 years, I think. So, you know, it's good to see more of it. Joe Kelly's just a wonderful storyteller. And... I was
surprised because wasn't the last one fully colored?
I don't think so.
I thought it was.
They released a colored trade.
Yeah.
I've got 2 versions of it: a black and white version and a color version.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I just thought the monotone coloring, just like the 2 colors,
the blue.
I would like to have seen this fully colored. That's my only complaint.
Oh, that didn't bother me at all. I really like the way that Fiumora draws, and so all the black was good for me. But yeah, anyway, that's back. If that was a thing that you remember and liked, I think you should definitely check it out because there's more of it.
Yeah, cool. So we've been talking about Black Science with this new arc, the God World arc. The first 2 issues we thought were really, really strong. And is it possible that the peak of an arc could be the third issue, the middle of it? Because I read this issue and I was rooting for Grant. I was hooting and hollering.
I think that's the point.
Yeah. Like talk about such a buildup. Did you guys read this? Or?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Again, the exercising of demons and the dealing with the baggage and a lot of father issues and family and things like that as Grant is climbing this mountain, but then gets to the top and drops all his baggage, and then at the end of it, it's just like, yeah, all right, it is on, and like Remender just nailed it. And with that, the pacing I thought was just great, and of course Scalera is just stupid good. It looks great. The panel where he ignites the machine with his imagination, I was like, oh, that is awesome. So
Yeah, this is the hero moment. He's turning. Yeah. He's letting go of his past demons, and there's been a lot of psychoanalysis in this book. Lately.
That always works out. He'll be fine. Everything from here on, smooth sailing.
That's how drama works. I love this issue. I thought it was great. So
cool.
Connor, did you check out Swamp Thing by any chance?
I did, and I loved it.
I was Josh. Did you? No, I was. Yeah. I think I looked at it, and then for some reason I was like, I don't want to read that. So I was very surprised when you put it on the list, Ron. Why is that here?
Well,
series, yeah.
And what would get us to be interested in this, Connor?
Well, it was written by Len Wein, the co-creator of Swamp Thing, and you know, a veteran of the comics industry, and art by Kelly Jones, who was an artist I hated as a kid when he drew Batman, but here he's perfect for Swamp Thing, and this takes Swamp Thing back into the horror genre, whereas the previous run of this book in the New 52 was him as a pure superhero. This is back into Swamp Thing as a horror character.
There's a zombie, and
it felt very much like a comic from 1987.
The Phantom Stranger.
You know, classic Phantom Stranger. And anytime Phantom Stranger shows up,
I'm gonna read this. You guys, I'm good.
Gets me to like it. This felt like a 1988, issue of Swamp Thing, and I loved it. Yeah.
I think I see Len Wein, and I think, oh, it's not gonna be good. But this is the right way to have Len Wein.
Oh yeah, no, this is the Len Wein wheelhouse, as it were.
Yeah. That's fair. That's all right. Yeah.
But keep in mind, it's written like a 1987 comic, so Swamp Thing talks to himself out loud to narrate the action and things like that.
No
so,
problem with that.
It was great.
I wanted to check back in. I'm doing a lot of checking in this week. That's what I'm doing. On Sheriff of Babylon, number 2.
The Sheriff of Babylon.
The Sheriff. It's no longer the Sheriff of Baghdad, which is not a thing I noticed until I was looking at the cover, which is a thing I don't do enough. From Tom King and Mitch Garrett's...
They changed the title?
Yeah, they did.
Oh, wow. I missed that.
I don't know why. I could find out. I could do that.
It's not the first time. Maybe there was
The first issue I'm looking at here says The Sheriff of Babylon.
I swear. Or maybe it was solicited originally as The Sheriff of Baghdad. I'm almost sure of it. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was always Babylon and I didn't know. But I'm going to talk.
That's weird. Yeah, there's a Sheriff of Baghdad is a clothing company.
Maybe that's why.
No, you were right. It was, here it is. In August, it was Sheriff of Baghdad. It was announced as Sheriff of Baghdad, but then they changed the title after solicitation because of, let's see, where is it? Because of, it's already being used by retired Sergeant Major John McPhee, who already has a company about to call that. So
fair enough.
All right, so Josh was right. Okay.
So don't sound surprised.
I didn't mean
so basically, you're in the Green Zone, not too long after the, 2004. And there was a murder, and this guy's U.S. serviceman's trying to figure out what happened, and he hooks up with, I don't know, they say he's Iraqi police, but like he's just a weird person. At least in terms of what we think of as culturally normal or whatever, I suppose. This Iraqi guy who's sort of leading him around and showing him things and explaining things but not explaining them. Super compelling to watch the two of them talk and hang out together and watch him smoke. So it's basically like it's almost a murder mystery, but it's a murder mystery that's going on at the same time where we're trying to figure out this just entirely alien world and culture, basically, compared to what we're used to. And I think it's... At first, I was a little confused in the first issue. I wasn't really sure what to make of it. But with this, I found myself a lot more drawn in. And I don't tend to like... I know we do our War Corner talk. I don't tend to like war stories about more recent wars as much.
Morally ambiguous wars?
I have a really hard time...
It was clear. World War II was simple. It was just beat the Nazis. That was it was an easier time.
But also, it's still going on. And like, I don't understand the context of what everything means.
I'm pretty sure we beat the Nazis.
No. World War II,
Connor,
I get it.
Let's be honest. I mean,
did we?
I mean, I'm not entirely convinced that. But anyway,
I really enjoyed the second issue a lot more, and I had a better sort of idea and a footing where we're on. And I think Tom King is really, really talented. And I know that that's not like, but a lot of times when a new comic book person comes along, he's been kicking around for a couple of years doing mainstream stuff. Like, you're like, is it going to be pretty good, or is he actually going to have something to say? And I think, between The Vision and this, and he's written novels, he's really got something that's interesting and unique. And this is totally the kind of story that Mitch Garrett's is going to excel on. So I enjoyed it.
Cool.
Are we sure he's written novels, or is that the Tom King novelist that everyone confuses him with?
No, he's definitely written a novel. It's upstairs on my bedstand.
Okay.
And I think there was a second one that came out, but I don't know for sure yet.
Okay.
Cool. Well, those were the week's worth of books. It was a good start to the year.
It was not too much.
Yep.
You know, good amount. Nice variance. It wasn't one of those weeks where I was like, oh, I have the pick. Oh crap, what am I gonna do here?
Right.
It wasn't a sea of 3.5s. Which is a good week. Which you don't want.
Yeah, it was a solid week. Yeah, it was really good.
So if you want to talk about these books or other books, you can go to fanboy.com. They'll be posting this show and you can discuss. There's a lot of books that came out this week, so we didn't get a chance to talk about all of them. But if you want to talk about them, you can do it at fanboy.com. And so we thought we'd take a quick moment, mostly because Ron demanded that he get an explanation. Let's talk about my adventures during our holiday break.
How you spent your holiday vacation.
How I spent my holiday vacation.
Connor's pneumonia holiday.
Yeah. Other than coughing and hacking up stuff, which I'm still doing. Brief history. I moved to California 5 or so years ago and left my.
Was that long ago?
I know. Yeah, I had to say
go to hell.
We had that conversation around New Year's in New York when we were hanging out. I was like, Jesus, it's been 5 years. Oh my god.
I left all my comics behind at the family storage unit. If you're an old viewer of the iFanboy video show, they often popped up in the iFanboy minis we used to do. And a couple years after I moved, I got a call from my mom saying she was getting rid of the storage unit. So what are you gonna do with all these comics? And I stalled her for a while.
5 years.
Well, a full year, but long enough. So, you know, I promised her I'd take care of it when I got back home this year. And so I did. What I did this when I got home was.
When you say take care of it, what do you mean by take care of it?
You know,
well, there was about 30 some odd long boxes in her house and ended up going through every box. And I gave them away to a charity.
Oh my god!
A really great charity called Housing Works in New York, and I think they might be other places in the country too. But they help people with AIDS and all of their they're funded by a federal grant, so all of their proceeds of the stuff they sell goes to their charitable work. I ended up delivering 26 long boxes to the charity. go to the location on Crosby Street in New York. You might buy some of my old comics there. I ended up keeping a couple of series. Which I didn't think that was going to happen. But when I ended up going through all the boxes, I started getting this strong, strong pull of nostalgia and decided I couldn't give away everything. So I ended up keeping about 4 long boxes worth of series that mean something to me, and then gave everything else away.
Wow. So what did you keep?
I kept Batman. I kept Detective. I kept Action comics. I kept Superman. I kept Avengers. And I kept Justice League.
That's a lot. That's just like a lot of comics, Connor.
Well, it's not. I mean, comparatively, they're not. It's like 4 long boxes worth.
True.
I also kept Astro City and New Frontier.
Oh, good for you.
But I gave them away. It was hard. We loaded them all up in a U-Haul, drove them into Manhattan, dropped them off, and went and got a drink because it was a little weird. But
was it? How did it feel? Was it? Did it hurt? Did your stomach? Did you?
It didn't. I felt a weird weight lifted off my shoulders, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't have to worry about it anymore. I didn't have to worry about what to do with them, the condition they're in, you know, thinking about the future. What am I going to do with all these long boxes moving to California? I didn't have to worry about anything anymore. They were just gone. And what I thought was, everybody wins, you know. I haven't seen these books in 5 years, so for all intents and purposes, right, they don't exist to me anymore. So now someone will buy them and enjoy them.
They get a new life, right?
Yeah, the charity will do well, and I don't have to worry about it anymore. So,
and you get a pretty nice write off too.
Nice tax write off. So, it was tough. I tweeted out some photos, put them on Instagram. So if you follow me there, you saw them already. But it was a little strange. I'm not going to lie, but it wasn't as traumatic as I thought. Although I did need a drink afterwards. I did have I had an expensive scotch to celebrate the occasion, and then I moved on. But the thing is, I didn't get rid of all of them. I was looking through. I was like, I can't get rid of these Batmans. Like,
yeah.
You know, I remember reading this one, I ended up keeping some, but they're going to be slowly shipped to California, but they're gone.
Where are those going
to
be?
Yeah, we started boxing them up. They're going to be slowly shipped. I sent the photos to these two guys and immediately got a panicked response from Ron. what is going on? Because I know.
Wait, can you go back to them being slowly shipped? Does that mean you're gonna package up like 10 of them and ship them at a time, or how does that work?
Oh, I left materials and money with my mom, and she's gonna handle that.
He's gonna find a Croatian girl and strap them all around her body like in The Wolf of Wall Street.
Mm-hmm. If your mom is cool, and I know she is, I would send one a week. So each week, like, ooh, what comic am I getting now? And like, right. and relive the childhood. There you go.
So it was.
At first, I was going to be like, that sounds like a pain in the ass for her. But on the other side, I was like, you have a point there. That is neat.
Right. Yeah. Think about that. Relive it. Yeah.
I thought about it. You know, there was a point where I was on a slippery slope where I was like, oh, these are the books I'm saving. And then I was like, oh, but what about G.I. Joe? Well, what about? And I was like, nope, I have to stop because otherwise I'll just end up saving them all. So. I made my hard choices, and I am living with it.
Wow.
You know, you've come a long way from where we started. I mean, you were the, you know, Paper Till I Die is where we started. And
well, I still like trades. I still prefer trades.
Yeah, no, I get that. I get that, but...
I still read paper books.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's tough. I mean, and Lord knows, I mean, I had an incident in my apartment in November... that required me to empty one of my closets, which is full of long boxes, and I think there's like 35 of them in there. And when I had them all, I literally had to move the couch out of my living room to accommodate the boxes out of the closet. And I remember looking at it, I'm like, oh dear God, what am I holding on to here? What am I, you know?
Well, that was the thing. Like, I literally haven't seen them in half a decade. So it's like, why am I keeping these? Yeah, sure, it'd be great in the future to have them in a house and have a kid read them. But those things may never happen. So at this point,
well, this conversation's getting deep.
Well, you know, I may never have room for this. I may always be living in an apartment in LA, I don't have the room for them in my current living situation. And I would suddenly be single if I said, here's 33 long boxes we got to figure out. But
well, let's do the math on that.
I've
been married a long time. You may want to have a little talk with me about it.
Someone else may get enjoyment out of these, is what I'm saying. Yeah. So I let them go.
So is this, I mean, if you love something, let it free. Is this personal growth? Like, do you feel as if you are a better person now, or just
let me also reveal something I haven't revealed yet. this will be a slight regression in the personal growth. So what I decided was, I was looking through these, and I would page through a couple of issues here and there, is that I really love the Bronze Age, Silver Age comics. Like, that's my wheelhouse. That's what I grew up on. When I was a kid, I didn't like reading new comics. I liked buying back issues and reading the comics from the early 80s and the late 70s. So I'm going to pick a couple of series, and I'm going to start filling them out.
I'm fine. I'm good with that. I don't think that's contradictory at all.
Yeah, I'm gonna start, old Bronze Age Justice Leagues or.
I like the idea that after all that we have been through in the world of comic books, in it to various levels of professional status, like that feels like, okay, let's get back to this, the early bit of it. Mm-hmm. And not in a weird, creepy, like like a nice way. Like, I know you're not going to slab them all and wait
for
them.
No.
It's about having those things.
Yeah, I, those are the books I read as a kid and loved, I'll pick up a book, a Justice League here or there, or an Action Comics here or there.
You can rifle through a bin, do the finger walking. Oh, yeah. Oh, there's 15.
So that's what I'm doing. That's my new plan as a comic fan is got rid of almost all my comics, keeping a couple of series, going to fill some of them out as my life goal and see how that goes. Ron, are you still working on your Uncanny X-Men run, or did you stop doing that?
I paused on that. I honestly, in terms of comics as a hobby, you know, like, I pretty much have halted all hobby like activities, you know, ranging, you know, from what I would say is collecting individual issues and then also original art.
You're not putting out the newsletter anymore?
Not putting out the newsletter. No, I don't go to the meetings anymore. Right. I'm busy, you know, things up. But that's the thing. It's like, you know, so, you know, seeing what you've done and then thinking about what am I going to do with my godforsaken albatross of a collection. You know, I don't know if I would be able to, you know, get rid of all of them but keep X-Men or not. I don't know.
Live in the kind of place you could just put them on the side of the road?
Oh, yeah, totally.
And they would just disappear.
Yeah, last year after Thanksgiving, I put half a turkey on the street and it was gone in 5 minutes.
I put a puzzle. I put a,
don't
you know,
make
I,
people
I put a puzzle
who cough
on the sidewalk.
Laugh.
It just disappeared.
things just go. It's no problem. But the thing is that I'm also like, what's funny is when I think about it, I'm like, oh well, I'll just sell it because clearly it's worth something. No, you know, I know. Well, that's the thing.
That really is the question that people ask me and us a lot. Like, what do I do with these? And I'm like, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I investigated that. It's just not worth. It's just not. worth it, the time and effort to sell. And I figured it was better to give it to a charitable organization that would benefit from it as opposed to a comic store.
But even that question is like, it's hard to find what to do with them in that instance.
Well, it was. I had to find one that was willing to accept 26 long boxes.
Yeah.
Right.
And the first place I went to didn't want them. And then the second place said, oh, yeah, we love selling comics. We do really well with that. So, it worked out for everybody.
All right.
Wow. They even have a staff, apparently, of three people on their staff who just deal with their comics.
Yeah.
Who, you know, catalog them, price them. And
oh, that's great.
That's a job you can feel good about.
Yeah. All right. Well,
so there you go. If you're in New York, the housing works on Crosby Street is where my comics are. If you want to buy any mail. Oh, you know what? A lot of them are signed. So you might find
them. Oh, wow. Jeez.
By you? You just signed them all as you were giving them out?
Yeah, I signed them all. Just, actually, you know what? Some random ones are drawn in from, you know. Find those. It'll be a nice surprise for you if you find one of those. But so no, a lot of them when I used to go to cons, comic signed are in there.
Yeah.
A lot of like 90s era comics, a lot of Dan Jurgens.
All right, then.
Yeah.
Jerry Ordway.
Nice.
So there you go.
Well, that's a
little bit of the shakes when I was doing it, but it's over now, and there you go.
It's got to be like exercise,
I just feel good afterwards.
Yeah, totally. So, all right.
It was weird watching him go, watching him wheel down the sidewalk, but.
You know. I mean, that's like 20 years of your life, man.
Oh, it's more than that.
Don't do that. don't do that.
All right.
So
all
let's
right.
talk about another thing that we obsess on. If you haven't, go back and make sure you check out Goodfellas Minute. It's our other podcast that we do. 5 days a week, we are going through Goodfellas, the excellent film, minute by minute. You can find that at goodfellasminute.com. And
we're a little over halfway done with the movie.
Yeah. God. It's a lot of work. it turns out it's fun.
It's
super fun, but it's a long movie, is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
the show's gonna go till the second week of April, so we've still got a lot of show left.
So catch up, get on. It's not going anywhere too. So you know, it's all a piece. It's a large.
I plan to delete all the episodes from our account as soon as we were done recording.
Yeah, like you got a week to finish.
Yeah,
go check that out.
All right. And if you like, if you enjoy this this comic talk, head over to ifanboy.com where you can leave a comment on this show and say what you thought of the recent comic releases. Talk with the other iFanboy community. If you have any questions for us or if you want to participate in the show, you can always email us at contact@ifanboy.com. We love hearing from you. We got some great emails over the break and we're going to get back to them next week. And, you know, we want to make this a two-way street. We want to hear from you. We want to, you know, have the back and forth. So do all that. Go to ifanboy.com, check it all out. Go to facebook.com/ifanboy to follow us on Facebook. And if you're on Twitter, you can find us at ifanboy, or you can follow us individually. You can find Josh at J.A. Flanagan, Connor at C.S. Kilpatrick, and I am at RonXO.
And if you like the show, any podcast you like, go to iTunes, write a review. It helps people find podcasts. It helps. It's one of the things you can do. And actually, this is our new goal in 2016. So,
we have a new goal.
A couple years ago, remember we were trying to get to 1,000 ratings, and we did. We're currently at 1,060. Let's get to 1,000 reviews. We've got 900 and we're over. We're at 731 customer reviews. So, let us get to 1,000. Let's do that. Let's make this audacious goal. Let's go to the moon. Let's go to the moon in this decade.
Wow.
731 current reviews. Let's get to 1,000.
That was wonderful, by the way.
That was great.
Bravo.
So let's try it. Let's see what happens. Let's do it. Let's be crazy.
Ich bin ein Podcaster.
So go to iTunes, leave a review for this show, for any show you listen to. It really helps. Everyone appreciates it. Go leave a review for Tom Versus, because he's back.
Yes, that was great. It was wonderful.
Maybe it alienates an audience that we're constantly making references to the 60s and prior decades.
Possibly.
This is comics, man. Everything's about making references.
That's an excellent point. All right, play ball.
That's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. We're back. We're energized. Let's talk about more comics this year. I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
And I'm Josh.
Yo, the world is yours. The world is yours. To everybody in Brooklyn, y'all know the world is yours. The world is yours. Everybody in Mount Vernon, the world is yours. Long Island, yo, the world is yours. Staten Island, yeah, the world is yours. South Bronx, the world is yours.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now?
I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.